You're on Island Life on Waiheke Radio, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Over the last few weeks, you will have seen around the island a number of petition forms and some activity going on around the issue of ferries, always a hot issue here on the island. And the people behind the Fair Go for Waiheke Ferry campaign are Charlotte Lockhart and Andrew Barnes, and they're both with me this morning. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Morning, Chris.
So tell us a little about why you've kicked off this campaign.
I think essentially we saw after the demise of Explore that the process by which the island was served was not as transparent or as effective as it could have been. And obviously we all saw the benefits of having a bit of competition. It delivered, you know, better service, better fares, more convenience. Now it's gone. The question is, how do we move forward from there?
So you're both relatively new to the island, aren't you? So I'm interested in why you jumped. You know, there's any number of local issues. What drove you to jump in on this one?
Well, I mean, I think for us, we're obviously it affects us the most coming across over to the island. The ferry thing is affects absolutely everybody on the island. So, and as new people to the island, we're also not connected to any of the other factions or you know, groups that have their own agendas. So we felt we could come to this with a much fresher approach that was a little bit more autonomous and also a little bit more apolitical.
So when Explore was running, I mean, you used Explore, and so there were a group of people who were, I suppose, disappointed when that service finished.
Yes.
Yep. So you were kind of part of that group.
We were down on the pier waving them goodbye on their last sailing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the real issue here, Chris, is that the ferries here are on what they call an exempt service. And the exempt service means that there is no oversight by any body, council or otherwise, as to the frequency of services, the fare structures that are in place, or indeed about continuity of service. The whole ethos that we have on an exempt service is that there is competition, and competition provides those protections. So once competition is either removed or ineffectual, the island has absolutely no protection. And I think that was the big thing that appealed to me when we started this program, because, you know, this is a community where the link is so important. We, you know, it's the only way we get to and from work. It's the only way we get to and from Auckland. And to have that at the whim of a commercial operator, however benevolent, is a little bit of a dangerous position for the island to be in.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there. So let's start off with you talk about driving, you know, frequency, service and fares. Are you dissatisfied with the current frequency and fare structure?
It's actually not about that. It's actually about how we can guarantee service levels going forward, how we can guarantee that price increases will not move ahead of the CPI. The level of service that we had in the last 12 months was great when we went to half-yearly ferries. But are we going to have half-yearly ferries next year? Do we know?
Half-hourly.
Half-hourly. Are we going to get them next year or not? Do we know? Because there is no contract that says a ferry operator must provide that frequency of service.
And the fares we do pay are not fair. We do pay more than equivalent distances on the Gulf. And as commuters, we're entitled to the same protection, if not more, because this is our only way to get home. Every other commuter route on the Gulf, you can drive to. And whether that be by bus or car or taxi, you could walk even. I'm not that good a swimmer. I can't get home unless I'm on a ferry.
Yeah, but it's interesting though, isn't it, that although it is, you know, the deregulated route on the harbour, on the Gulf, it is the service that has the most frequent and the widest spread across the day of services of any of the runs.
Well, certainly it does. It's very frequent. That frequency is supported by the tourism aspect of the route. So, but again, I can't drive home. I can't get my frequency in any other way. I can go back to Half Moon Bay on the ferry, but that service starts finishes reasonably early in the evening. But I can hop on a Hauraki Eastern bus and get home quite easily and quite cheaply as well. Our monthly cost for our monthly pass is higher than anywhere else, and that's, you know, for a comparable amount of time, or even the single use is higher. So we're, you know,
yeah. So you've drawn that comparison in your campaign to the Half Moon Bay, which is what, $75 cheaper a month for the monthly pass.
Cheaper.
Yeah, but again, the frequency of service, what they run 11 times a day compared to 24 for
Waiheke. But I can still hop on a bus.
Yeah, I think you have to look at it in the context that, you know, when before Explore, we had half the number of sailings. We now have dropped back to the winter timetable. But I think, as Charlotte says, it's the only option. Now, if you're going to run a ferry service on this run, by definition, if there is no alternative, you can't stop it at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, because a whole pile of people will still be trying to get home. And also, realistically, even as a commercial operator, you have to recognise that you've got to provide a full service. You can't just provide a partial service. That's often been the argument about these competitive routes, that people cherry-pick the key points. You've also got to remember, too, that a ferry is a fixed asset. A crew, broadly, when you're paying their salaries, you pay them, regardless of whether they're doing 5 sailings a day, 10 sailings a day, or 20 sailings a day. So the more sailings you do, actually, profitably, that's the best outcome for you as a business operator.
Yep.
And the tourism provides the additional benefit of having a higher fare for some of those seats on the ferry.
So if the current exemption was gone, and the route had was, you know, looked over by Auckland Transport. So what tends to typically happen with, say, the bus routes that they administer, or I suppose potentially with the ferry routes, so there's not a lot of options in terms of provider, is that the competition there is competition by tender to run the service, not competition on the... You haven't got two bus companies running the same bus route.
That's no. Correct. Yeah,
the competition comes in at the tender stage.
At the tender process.
The ferries are all going out, other than obviously our lovely exempt ones, are all going out to tender within the next month. To open tender. So Auckland Transport will have some real transparency in terms of what it genuinely costs to be able to provide commuter services around the Auckland region.
So if this route was one that came up for competitive tender, there would still just be one provider operating the service.
Yes, that's right. There would be one provider. It is technically possible that they could tender slots. So they could tender a top-of-the-hour slot and a bottom-of-the-hour slot and therefore run two ferry companies on the route. Practically, as we've, I think, seen, it's very difficult for two companies to run on the route simultaneously. The one advantage of competitive tendering is the spotlight is shone on it. With regard to the terms, the service standards, there are service level agreements and so on and so forth. Whereas with an exempt service, you sort of get what you're given, and that is partially the problem. That's not to say that the service, I mean, we've always said through the campaign, this is not anti-Fullers in any way, because Fullers are providing an essential service, but it's the framework within which they operate is the one that is questionable to us.
So, again, coming back to, you know, say if you achieved what you want and the route was no longer exempt. So we have the tendering process and by whatever means, and they get that. There's no need or no direct connection to say that that would mean there was a fare subsidy, however that was it, because the fare subsidies are used to get people out of cars. You talked about that before, Charlotte.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. I mean, the fare subsidy, we're not saying that that Auckland Transport will put a cent in. That's obviously a decision that they have to make. But the competitive tender process means that we are then in a situation where the best foot forward is, or best offer is put on the table for the Waiheke community, and so we will have the best offer. I would imagine that also that within that contract, and you know, as I say, this is not something we see as being something we will step out of as soon as this is achieved. There needs to be an accountability to Auckland Transport to ensure that the contract that they put in place would allow, for example, for them to put in a subsidy at a stage when they could, you know, afford to do so.
So you've really got two options. You've talked about the, you've put up two, kind of an A and B option that you're after, haven't you?
Well, there are a number of ways that this could be done. I mean, what we're saying, the problem with the exemption is it makes it binary. The route's either exempt or it's not. Along with Minister Kaye and Fuller's and Auckland Transport, what we want to do is look at what are the various options that might be available to us. Some of that may well require legislative change. So it really is about creating a conversation that's going to end up with a better result for Waiheke. I also don't want that to be something that ends up being locked in too much, so that therefore, as a result, we can't get better still. We're entitled to the same protections as everybody else in Auckland.
I think it's fair to say that the historic process by which the service was exempt was exercised by the minister after a degree of lobbying, and it wasn't really a transparent decision as to why the Waiheke run was exempt. Again, for me, I think transparency is the best protection as far as the community has got. If we can see why decisions are made, what those criteria are, what the structures are, then that, I think, provides us with the protection, because ultimately we have the sanction of the ballot box and we need to hold the people accountable who make those calls.
But that was the next thing I was going to ask you, actually. I mean, do you believe that, I mean, there is a lot of cynicism about Auckland Transport. Would it be any better? You know, we faced the situation not that long ago where Auckland Transport tried to kick the two councillors on the board off the board. There is a lot of cynicism about wastage from Auckland Transport, about the lack of transparency there. Mm-hmm. And you've got this huge bureaucracy. Would we actually be any different?
Well, possibly not, but at least we'd know, and we do have sanction. If I said to you how much profit was being made on the Waiheke run at the moment, could you tell me? Could you tell me how much tax is being paid in this country as a consequence of that? Could you tell me how many passengers are on there? What's the different breakdown between tourist tickets and commuter tickets? No, you couldn't. So we're actually sitting here arguably and saying a little bit of plague on all your houses. The problem is backroom deals done, whether it be by politicians, Auckland Transport, commercial operators, are not acceptable when we have an essential service upon which the prosperity of the island depends. And if all we get out of this is a spotlight shone on the process, then at least we know why the decisions were made and by whom. Whereas I think at the moment we have no idea why those decisions were made and whether in fact we're getting a fair deal.
I suppose, in a way, we're dealing with a legacy of a significant political shift, well, a couple of decades or more ago now, where, you know, public transport used to be a public facility. It was run by the councils. And then it was, the national government of the time who made that move to that it go out to the private sector. And that's really the legacy we're dealing with here, isn't it?
It's a bit of that, but to be honest, the framework was in place at the end of the last Labour administration to have a tendering process put out for routes. So I think that was a recognition that councils are not necessarily the best people to drive a bus or steer a ferry. But the mechanism by which the exemptions came through was, yes, a legacy of a change of government, in that it was brought in by national. And obviously there was an ideological change at that time. Now, we are where we are. The minister of the day did contemplate that where the run or any run looked like it was being subject to a monopolistic situation, which is broadly what we've got, he did indeed contemplate that an ordering council could be put forward to change that situation. Now, that can only happen with full consultation. That's precisely what Charlotte and I are trying now to do, to get that consultation process going, to get the community engaged, and then deliver a message to Wellington.
And keep the community engaged. I mean, this isn't something that is just this petition and we'll be done and we'll be gone. This is we're in this for the long haul. We want to rally the troops for the long haul, and we want to insist on that transparency, because with that information, with that transparency, we as a community can understand where the benefits are for us and where we could be pushing for more.
So on the long term, I suppose, there's the danger, isn't there, of perverse outcomes. You know, if you've got a route which is up for tender, does that mean that whoever's running it isn't going to invest in new boats? You know, we've seen this in a number of places. I think Dunedin comes to mind, where the bus service, that they were running these cheap, shoddy buses, because who's going to invest with the fear that they will lose the tender?
Yeah, I think this is to be honest, a little bit of a furphy. If you think about a situation of a competitive route, if somebody with bigger pockets than you comes on next year, decides they're going to drive you out of business, where's your certainty? Now, alternatively, if you actually have a 12-year contract, which is the sort of term that you put in place for ferry contracts, that gives you certainty. Now, by the way, at the point when it comes up for renewal, you're back to competitive again, which is precisely what you would be on a daily basis if the route was a competitive route. So I think this is a little bit disingenuous. There are multiple ways as well that you can finance boats. You don't have to build them. You can lease them. You can charter them. You could get them with somebody else financing them. I think that was a little bit of smoke and mirrors, to be brutally honest. I sadly have to declare an interest. I used to be in shipping finance, so I got a vague idea on that one.
So, and none of the other ferries around the community are awful. I mean, you know, so... I mean,
well, that's arguable.
Well, yeah, but the reality is that there are lots of ferries operating within the Auckland region that manage on the contract. And we will see that with this new contract tendering process that's going up. So the fact that it would be different if our ferry service was the only one. Well, there are others.
I think it's also fair to say, I would reckon that pound for pound, if you looked at the Waiheke run versus the other runs, the oldest ferries are on the Waiheke run.
Although we will have new ferries.
Jet Raider, you know, some of these boats are 20 years old. And we've had one new one so far and then two new ones supposedly on order. So, again, if that was the issue, why isn't there an absolutely up-to-date fleet sailing on the Gulf at the moment? And as you know from, two years ago, I mean, a third of the Fuller's fleet was out of action for a long period of time. That it sort of runs against the argument.
So you've got your public meeting this afternoon. What do you hope to achieve there?
Well, so we've invited a number of people along, and so it's quite exciting. We've got Doug Hudson's coming from Fuller's, which we really appreciate him being there. We've got Auckland Council are going to be there, Nikki Kay. We really want to invite the rest of the community. Denise Roche is going to try and be there. She hasn't confirmed whether she can be or not. Jacinda Ardern, sadly, has got something else on, so she's not going to be able to be here, but she's wanting to be kept informed. So we see this as being very cross-party. Auckland Transport sadly can't be there. We met with them yesterday. They want to meet with us again next week and have an update. They do want to remain engaged in this conversation. So we want to be able to provide the people who are able to be there to the community, for the community to be able to engage with the conversation and make up their own minds as to whether they want to back our petition or what they want to ask for. As a community, we need to be very clear, what is our bottom dollar or bottom line, and what do we require these people who control the issue to sort out a solution for us. And there are certain solutions that will be easy and certain solutions that might be quite hard. But just because it's hard, does that mean the community is not entitled to that? So that's what we want, is the community to come along. Everyone, no matter who, what your view is on this, come along, have your say. Let's rally behind this in a way that the community, I know the community can do this, so let's do it.
All right, so that's 3 o'clock this afternoon?
3 o'clock at Mora Hall.
All right, okay, and the petition, you can get that from your site, which
yes.
is, tell us the website.
So the website is ferry4waiheke, that's the number 4.org.nz, and we also have a Facebook page, so go on there and like us. You feel free to join our email list as well, and you can do that through the website.
Okay, Charlotte Lockhart, Andrew Barnes, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, Chris.
And good luck with your meeting this afternoon.
Thank you.